The Fresno mayor's race is heating up this July, and two candidates are squaring off in the November general election. They are front runner in the race, Henry Perret, who came in first in the June primary, followed by Fresno City Councilmember Lee Brand, who joins us now in our studio today. Lee, welcome to Valley Public Radio.
Thank you. Good morning.
Lee, you racked up a big endorsement last week with number three finisher in the primary, H. Spees, endorsing your campaign and joining on your team. I want to talk to you about that in a little bit, but first, turning to your day job, so to speak, and that's Fresno City Council, this ongoing situation about the water in Northeast Fresno residents' homes. This is something that our station reported on last week, and before that, this has been going on through the media for a while now, that people are finding out that they have water in their homes that is somehow rusty or contaminated in some way. The water that's coming in from the city doesn't have that problem, but somewhere along the line, something's happening. When did you first learn about this problem?
Well, I would say early this year, we started getting a lot of complaints from my office and directly to the city water department about discolored water. And I think what it was, this problem's been around for over 10, 12, 13, 14 years. And I'll tell you how what we found out. And so I think social media was, people were connecting the dots and saying there must be, and it's not just an isolated case, it's coming up enough that I asked our office and Tommy Esquita went out aggressively, went out to people, did testing, and he'd go say, can I talk to your neighbor and your neighbor and your neighbor, and did additional testing to the point where we were determining, you know, at least preliminarily it was tied into galvanized pipes and potentially to the Northeast Surface Water Treatment Plant. And so we agreed to have a series of public meetings. We've had two public meetings already. The first public meeting was in April, and I attended that meeting. And at first, I had never been given access to the presentation. I didn't know exactly where they were at this meeting. And Tommy did a great job explaining what the problem was. It was, you know, it was basically galvanized pipe that was corroding after so many years. And there was never a magic marker like at 10 years or 20 years, in some cases 5 years, other cases 30 years. But when it corroded to the interaction with the soil, small holes would get in the pipe, you'd get rust, and get rust, you get discolored water, and in some cases you get elevated levels of lead. And there was some discussion about, you know, the Northeast plant. When the Northeast plant came in 2004, a lot of people said the problem started then. But there's never been a simple cause and effect. There's an anomaly for everything. So one guy says, yeah, it happened exactly on this date. The guy next door has no problem. So that's part of the complexity. But it's an ongoing thing. And what the surface water that comes from, this is from Millerton and from the San Joaquin River, and we have the well water. And the surface water is more pristine. It doesn't really have the minerals. And having the minerals are inhibitors that, you know, that prevent corrosion, and there's a proper pH level. I'm just getting into the details here, but so the city's still trying to figure out if somehow the mixture between surface water and the well water was causing a problem, and it may have caused a problem. Remember, prior to the surface water treatment plant coming in, because I've been in that district since 1989, it was a period of rapid growth in the 1980s and 1990s in Northeast Fresno. And what happened was that there were so many homes and businesses there, water pressure. I remember taking a shower. Come on, get a few drops out of you. You took a shower between, say, 7 a.m. and 8 a.m., you'd have a slow shower. And it was because the wells were not sufficient. So they built the surface water treatment plant in 2004. When that came online, it solved the problem of pressure, but obviously created other problems.
Lee Brand is with us today talking about the issue of water in Northeast Fresno. Some residents there have concerns that their water in their homes may be contaminated by rusty galvanized pipes. And is there a connection with the city's water treatment plant? Lee, the city is right now in this big Recharge Fresno project, building another water treatment plant serving a good portion of the rest of the city. Should this be a concern for other, even older parts of the city that also probably have galvanized pipes in many homes? Is the city doing something to be proactive on that end?
Well, so far, the city has spent $250,000 in its investigation. The city has engaged the State Department of Water Resources, Fresno County Health Department, EPA, other agencies, and private individuals. And at that first meeting I mentioned earlier, that's when I heard for the first time there was a couple, there's apparently two or three that had been receiving bottled water since 2004, 2005. I'm saying, well, how in the hell did that ever happen? And apparently, back then, there were some a few incidents that people reported discolored water. In fact, I had a house out there myself, a rental house, that same problem. I was told, the problem is your problem. It's from the meter inside. Simply just run the water for a couple of minutes. You solve it. Okay. I was never told to test, never told there was a bigger problem. I think at that point in time, it was a smaller problem. But the city, in my opinion, failed to act back in 2004, 2005. Had they done what we have done, the right thing, which is to do the exhaustive investigation to determine, hey, there's got to be a correlation between this new surface water treatment plant and something that's going on down there. But the unique problem here is that the same builders used the same galvanized pipes in northwest Fresno and southeast Fresno. Why are these mainly popping up in southeast Fresno? And the only thing different would be it's either the soil conditions and how the galvanized pipe reacts, or it's the chemical way that the water comes from the surface water treatment plant. And I've talked to experts, and they say the soil, not the issue. So that's the only thing we can, at least this point in time, pinpoint. And as we speak now, the city is like in a lab. They're trying to fine-tune what's the right level. They can't overreact because they might have somebody who solved their problem. In many cases, it was simply changing a fixture. Any fixture, plumbing fixture, between built installed before 2014 has lead. Every single one has lead. So you're going to get traces of lead. In some cases, houses only had one fixture that showed the discolored water. And typically, it was like a back bathroom that nobody ever used because it just built up. In some cases, it was hot water heaters that failed. So there's a lot of things we're looking at. I can say from my point of view, and I'm sure I'm speaking for the administration, this will not be complete till we've solved, we've found a definite cause, we've found a solution, and that there are no houses in Fresno with discolored water or any houses in Fresno with high levels of lead.
Your opponent in the November election for Fresno Mayor, Henry Perea, is holding a press conference in about 40 minutes mm-hmm. about this very issue, an issue that affects mm-hmm. your district. We don't know exactly what he's going to say, but he is has posted that he's going to solve this problem and take care of it. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on Supervisor Perea's weighing into this issue?
He's an opportunist trying to capitalize on the misfortune of others. A person with 24 years of failed leadership who did nothing during his time on the city council to address this water capital program. It was one of several councils that kicked the can down the road, failed to act, who has his own problems in his own districts with forest contaminated water, who's failed to act. I did the right thing. I took a lead in terms of the water capital program 2 years ago when it wasn't popular to say, gee, I'm going to raise your water rates because we have a major problem in our aquifer. We have a problem back then. We still have contaminated wells in southeast Fresno, which is his supervisor district. He opposed it until the end. He advised a political candidate not to take a stand on this deal. So this is all about opportunism, not about real leadership. And I went even further by introducing I'll bring out in about another month, a water rebate program to offer help for those people who have to replace fixtures or their supply line, and a low interest rate loan for people who may have more serious problems to address the issue.
Henry also posted, I think it was last week, online, a photo of a water bill and circled the bottom line saying this is the increase. And in fact, there have been increases significantly tied to the new water infrastructure plan the city has underway.
You can pick those two documents, the copy of the bill and the raise of 33%. The recent post of a water bottle, and Lee Rand didn't do anything in 8 years. And there's hypocrisy. They're inconsistent. Had he taken action during his tenure, we wouldn't have this problem. When it became obvious there was a critical mass, myself and the city of Fresno and Tommy Escueda tackled this problem head on. This should have been done years ago.
Your predecessor, Jerry Duncan, though, is saying that the city should have known a long time ago that this was going on.
Well, it's funny because there's a public records request by a local media station asking for emails. So once I finished the April meeting, I asked my assistant, Ginger, who was then Jerry's assistant, would you go through old emails and let's see what was going on back then? And so did the city manager. Well, you'll see this shortly. So there are emails that Jerry Duncan knew exactly what was going on, was in contact with the water department, Lon Martin, even had suggested a closed session meeting, and it just sort of died about 2007. So there's no question he and others knew there was a problem back then. My contention is they should have taken it beyond just saying what they told me. The problem's inside the meter. There's no health issue. Just flush the water out. They should have did what we did. Leadership is taking chances, is going out and doing the right thing, and that means spending money, and that's part of the water capital program. The city was overdrafting its water supply. Building a surface water treatment plant addresses that issue. But to do that and to guarantee a safe, reliable water source for years to come, our children and our grandchildren, it takes some political courage to take on these programs. Yes, the rates went up. We still have the lowest rates in California for any city over 100,000. We're also able to secure a $200 million, 1.6% low-interest rate state grant, which saved the city from our original proposal, $204 million. And that $204 million will be passed back to ratepayers in lower rates.
You're talking about tough political decisions. Lee Brand joining us today. And issues that require political capital. The city just passed its new fiscal year budget. One of the big things in that is increasing the city's operating reserve mm-hmm. moving forward and for the next few years, increasing that significantly. That is something that there's always that push and pull. When there's extra money available, it's very tempting to devote that to other programs. You were very adamant that you wanted to see that reserve increased. How do you think that plays out, especially given the political climate here right now? This is something that in 2008, when Alan Autry left office, the reserve was supposedly there, mm-hmm. but apparently it wasn't entirely so. How does that play into this overall race?
Well, this is about leadership, fiscal management, discipline, courage to take the lead and to do unpopular things. We inherited a pretty difficult situation in 2009, and there was not a reserve there. There was, when you're deficit spending $36 million, you know, there's not a reserve. But I'm not looking at the past and look at the future. During our tenure, we came very close to bankruptcy, and through, in many cases, the fiscal policies that I introduced during that period of time. Not only were we able to stay out of bankruptcy, we were able to pay off $36 million in internal loans. We've now built up a reserve to $20 million. And it's always the case of, did you leave this place better than you left it? So I can say, as of last week, Fitch Reporting Agency, Credit Reporting Agency, elevated Fresno's credit rating to an A. We were down 5, 6, 7 years ago, down to junk bond status. And in the report itself, it says, in part, due to financial policies adopted by the city that I wrote, I made a difference. I came and wrote policies, debt policies, and other fiscal policies that provided a foundation for the city, for future city councils, future mayors, that the city would never again get itself in the situation that we got ourselves into in 2009. And that's what leadership's all about.
One thing that I haven't heard talked about a lot lately, and it was a huge issue back when you first came on the council, and that was the issue of the police auditor. Mm-hmm. This is something that the last administration debated back and forth with the council. It was in the budget. It was out of the budget. The police chief weighing in on different sides and how exactly that position was going to be crafted, what sort of powers were going to be set aside for the Office of Independent Review. That's something that was controversial also at the time, and it was a significant cost as well to add that to the city's budget. How satisfied are you with the way that's working out and with the cost that's associated? Because I've heard some people say this really isn't an independent review of a particular controversial action. We've seen some officer-involved shootings recently that have gained a lot of attention. The independent auditor isn't going to do his own investigation into those incidents. He's going to rather look at the complaints that are filed against the police department and see if those complaints are justified or not. How satisfied are you with that police auditor?
Well, the history was in the previous administration, they had tried to bring this forward. So it's something that's been around for 10 years before that. In the first year I was there with Mayor Swearingen coming in, there was a lot of pressure from the POA and to not do it.
The police union.
And I made a decision that I thought the model we came up with more limited investigative power, subpoena power, was more of a compromise to recognize that police officers have a lot of scrutiny, have a very, very difficult job. There's an internal investigation done in everything. And particularly nowadays, when it's been so politicized, being a police officer, everything is second-guessed. You're the enemy, not the friend. So things have been twisted upside down. I think this model has served the city well. I think the current guy is doing a good job. Does provide a arm's length transaction. There's an independent agency. Over the years, some good recommendations that came out of it. Certain people will probably always want more, but I think what we have now is a very workable situation. It provides a degree of independence. And other changes like body cameras and an aggressive effort by our new district attorney to follow up on things. I think, at least at this point in time, I'm comfortable with what we have now, the model we're using.
Do you think Chief Dyer and the police department should release the body camera footage from the most recent officer-involved shooting where two officers shot and killed a young man on Clovis Avenue?
Once the investigation is complete, and out of respect for the privacy of the family, they should release it. It's got to be done at the appropriate time. You can't come out early and second-guess things. We saw clearly in cases across the country, like in Ferguson, where eyewitness accounts, once they were investigated by the Justice Department, they had one guy, I was right there, I saw this and saw that. And later on revealed he was only, talking about a secondhand he had heard from somebody else. So I think when this comes out at the right time, people can judge themselves. But I think this illustrates to me the need to have a body cam, to have, an independent eye to look at what really happened, because we're all human beings and everybody sees things from a different perspective. You could have 10 eyewitnesses and have 10 different accounts sometimes on what really happened.
Lee Brand is running for Fresno mayor. He joins us today on Valley Edition. His opponent in the November election is Henry Perea, a former Fresno City Council member and a current county supervisor. Henry voted for the construction of the baseball stadium downtown, known as Chuck Chancey Park. That is an issue that every administration since then has had to deal with, and specifically the lease and the status of the team's ownership. There's a lot of discussion now as this continues to be a problem. The team's finances aren't the best. I think that even the Grizzlies ownership will tell you that. It has been a money-losing venture, but they are continuing to draw crowds there at Chuck Chancey Park. Still, the issue of the stadium lease is a big one, and I'm sure it's going to come up in this campaign. If you were on the council in 1998, 1999, 2000, when that stadium was being debated back and forth, Jim Patterson was the mayor, strongly against it. What would you have done? What would have been the solution been to make that stadium work?
Well, the problem wasn't the stadium. The problem was the deal. It started out, you give us a land. At the time, the land they gave was from the RDA. That was land that was not worth a lot of money. And we'll give you the land, you build the stadium. And somehow it escalated from we build the stadium to the city build the stadium, and a $25 million stadium became a $46 million Cadillac version of the stadium. It was all done wrong. The negotiations were done wrong. That could have been done. Had I been in that council, it would have been what I did on my recent Economic Expansion Act. They would have been building the stadium. They would have taken out the bond to finance the stadium. The city could have offered them, incentives like we'll waive the development impact fees. We'll make some offsite improvements, which they did anyway. They spent $1.8 million after the stadium was built on offsite improvements for the stadium. And we could have said, we'll give you some performance-based incentives. We'll give you a break on parking. We'll give you a break on sales tax. That's how it should have been done. The burden should have been placed on the team itself. And what you would have saw, you could have built a stadium instead of being 12,000 capacity, maybe being 8,000, which still would have met AAA standards. You could always add the box seats later. It's like Bulldog Stadium. When they built that, you can build for expansion. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to spend $1 million on a sliding stage. They went way too far. The bond debt would have been probably half what it is right now. and the working model would have been easier. By the time I came in 2009, the team was owed the city over $1 million. The scoreboard hadn't worked for 3 years. The condition of the stadium, the seats, the plumbing, it was in deplorable condition. And they came to the city saying, we need help. We're losing money too fast. And they were paying $1.5 million. And nobody at the time had ever did a study of the leases on AAA baseball, because we did one in 2009 when I was part of a negotiating committee. And the average lease back then was about $200,000 or $300,000 a year. We were at 1.5. Obviously, nobody's going to make it at 1.5. What people fail to realize in running a baseball team, there's more than simply just, you know, turning the lights on, selling the hot dogs, and, you know, paying your utility bill. It's very expensive. You got to pay when an opposing team comes in. You got to pay all their hotel bills, all their food. You have major travel costs when you fly around the country playing different games. It's a very expensive sport. And I think there was a lot of failure to verify information. And what we had the choice in 2009 is two choices: an empty stadium or get half rent. I mean, I can go and spend 2 hours beyond that, but it's that simple. So in this campaign, Henry said, oh, they made a Liebert. He caved under pressure. He should have left the rent at 1.5. I can tell you with 100% certainty, had that been made, you'd look at a vacant stadium right now. Because for 3 or 4 years, they've been trying to sell a team at a rent that's less than $750,000, and there's no takers so far. And there's been no takers because even getting a $1 million naming rights deal, which that was not even presumed at the time this deal was made, the team has averaged a $1 million plus loss every single year, including a $1 million naming rights. So why would somebody want to double the rent and lose $2 million? It makes no sense at all. And it's irresponsible to make those kind of statements when the team's actually trying to find a buyer that, you know, can be a viable buyer. Because the stadium's a beautiful stadium. We now, whether it was a mistake or not, it's there. We need to make the best of it.
Before we go, Lee, any chance that Fresno is going to get Southwest Airlines?
That would be my hope. I mean, we made the message clear to the airport manager, Kevin, that we need to offer incentives. And I think that's a major component of bringing business to Fresno, is our connections with airlines. That's the first thing people look at. And when it's convenient, for example, we have a flight from Seattle to Fresno, people like Northam take attention to that.
Lee Branda joining us today, Fresno City Council member and current mayoral candidate facing off against Henry Perea in November. Lee, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Joe.